You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
And this is the final team preview, the preseason.
Please tell me that you just saved the best to last. Let's just go with that anyway.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I had to bring back one of our great friends of FWFB, Chris McBrien, making his fantasy baseball reappearance.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
As long as we're soliciting some sort of reaction and it's a strong reaction.
Toronto can take a sigh of relief and so can Jose Bautista's agent.
Ice cold, so cold he even shaved his beard at one point.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. And this is the final team preview of the preseason. We've gone through 29 teams, finally to the 30th. It is almost over. And of course, to cover the Toronto Blue Jays, I had to bring back one of our great friends of FWFB, Chris McBrien, making his fantasy baseball reappearance. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me on. Please tell me that I would have thought you'd done all the teams alphabetically, but it sounds like you left. Please tell me that you just saved the best to last. Let's just go with that anyway.
You know, we started alphabetically yeah. And then everything got switched around, but I saved this one for last.
All right. Well, we'll let people believe that anyway, so it's all good. So, yeah, no, the Toronto Blue Jays, this is going to be I'm obviously a huge fan of the Toronto Blue Jays. Everyone knows that, from my old fantasy baseball work. So it's going to be interesting talking about them. I'm really excited about this season. I'm excited about fantasy, period. But definitely excited about the Blue Jays and what we can look forward to this year.
Well, they've got an interesting team that we'll definitely jump into. But before we do, you've had, you left the fantasy baseball kind of analyst world, and you've started a new venture with our buddy Yancey Eaton, who's just on for the Rays preview.
Nice.
Tell us about it, because it's something a little different, but I fully endorse it.
It is a little different. It's a podcast called Pop Goes Your World, and you'll find it at popgoesyourworld.com, and it's, on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and all that kind of stuff. But a half an hour, 40 minutes every week, Yancey and I get together. The whole idea is we talk about movies, TV shows, whatever is on our mind. We just throw it there as a topic. And we have two different approaches, because I'm a Gen Xer, I'm the old guy, and Yancey's a young millennial. So we have two completely different takes on things, whether it's horror movies or video games or TV shows or whatever. And it's just a lot of fun. I really enjoy it a lot.
I listen every week, and it's really interesting for me because I'm kind of caught in between the two generations. I was born in 1984, so part of me kind of, identifies with the Gen X, part of me identifies with the millennials, even though, and the part of me, can't stand either side, and so, you guys start talking, and then I start yelling at my own phone.
That's awesome. As long as we're soliciting some sort of reaction, and it's a strong reaction, it's all good, I'll take it.
I don't think I've yelled as loud in the last year as when Yancey told the podcast that he didn't count the opening scene from what's the movie? Now I'm blanking on it. The war movie with Matt Dame or
Saving Private Ryan?
Yes. He said Saving Private Ryan's opening scene wasn't technically like the 20-minute battle.
I think his argument was is that that's not how the movie opened, because the movie technically opened with an old Matt Damon with his grandkids mm-hmm. and his kids walking to the cemetery and asking his wife, you know, if he was a good man and all that kind of stuff. And so then it went into the war scene, right?
Yes.
And then you realize at the end of the movie that kind of ties it together that, oh, that was Matt Damon. He was old. But so I guess that was the argument he was making, was that technically the D-Day battle on the beach wasn't technically the opening itself, because it didn't happen until a couple minutes in. So, yeah. Oh, well. It's all good.
So, but yeah, definitely check it out. Pop Goes Your World. You can find it on iTunes and Stitcher. And then you can find Chris on Twitter at CMcBrian. Definitely a good follow, a good person to interact with there. Good for fantasy advice, but definitely also good for pop culture advice.
That's right. And yeah, it's at CMcBrian. And just remember, McBrian is I-E-N. Some people get that wrong. Mm-hmm. But yeah, come give me a follow. I'll give you a follow back and we'll communicate. It's all good.
Awesome. Let's jump in to the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes.
We have Russell Martin at catcher. Last year, Russell Martin was going off at like a top 4 or 5 catcher. This year, just inside the top 10 at 10 on NFBC, 159th overall for 2 catcher leagues. What are your thoughts on Russell Martin for this season?
Well, first of all, just if I could preface it, let's definitely go through all these guys one by one. But just as a team, the thing that I think is mm-hmm. interesting is that, you know, we think of the Toronto Blue Jays as being this sort of juggernaut, especially from their offense, this offensive juggernaut. But I think the interesting thing is when you look at them from a fantasy perspective, there is literally 2 players on the team that are in the top 10 in their categories.
Yeah.
You know, and really, I mean, you could make the argument that it's really just Josh Donaldson and Osuna that are in the top 10 within their fantasy categories. Russell Martin is probably right on the cusp, probably like 10, 11 in rankings. You know, I think, you know, he'll change depending on which ranking you look at. Russell Martin is – okay, so here's the thing. Russell Martin's an interesting guy. Since he's come to Toronto, obviously, he's found a bit more of his power stroke. The thing is that you look at Russell Martin – as a whole, and it really does depend on what kind of league you're in. If you're in a season-long roto versus a head-to-head league, Russell Martin's a different kind of guy. In the head-to-head format, like a lot of catchers, I know, but Russell Martin is incredibly hot and cold. He will run ice cold for weeks and then run blistering hot for weeks and back and forth all season long. Last year, perfect example of that. Started the season ice cold. So cold, even shaved his beard at one point as a superstitious thing. But then later in the season, he's hitting fourth. He's hitting cleanup for the Toronto Blue Jays, for crying out loud. So, because he was running hot again. So he is incredibly hot and cold. And you need to be able to weather that storm with him. And you need to be able to understand that's what you're going to get. But really, at the end of the day, you're going to get your 20 home runs out of him. He's obviously kind of achieved that kind of level. And he's kind of plateaued there after having some, you know, less, you know, impressive home run seasons prior to that. So he's kind of really found his power stroke there. I like him where he's going to hit in the middle of the order. You know, most likely this year he'll probably hit 5th or 6th as opposed to 4th. He could get at times last year, but I still think of him as just outside the top 10. Okay. And part of that is his own doing because of his, you know, he runs hot and cold. And also because I think there's a couple other guys that are now sort of jumped into that top 10 that weren't there previously, guys like Sanchez and Contreras and Real Muto. So there's a couple guys that have sort of leapfrogged him. So not even so much of his own doing, but I think he's just outside the top 10.
That's for me, I think I'm totally fine with him being in the 8 to 10 range. I've always liked Russell Martin. I like the power. I think the average can come up a little bit. He struck out 27% of the time last year, which is kind of, I think, an outlier for him. I mean, he typically doesn't strike out, you know, that high. Usually it's in the, you know, high teens to low 20s. So I think if you can bring that under control, maybe the average comes back up a little bit. I agree with you. He's a guy you can pretty much bank 20 home runs, but you got to set it and forget it. Like you said, they're going to be the cold streaks. You got to weather through it. You know, I mean, I think he's perfect for me if you're kind of punting the catcher position in a one catcher league. You know, you can kind of wait and let all the other guys go. And if he's still hanging around there towards the end of your 12-team draft, I think he's a nice guy to kind of fit in. He's not necessarily a guy I'm targeting, though. I do have, you know, let's talk a little bit about just kind of the overall team construction. You mm-hmm. being a Blue Jays fan, I have, you know, some doubts about this team and kind of its makeup. It's extremely right-handed in the lineup, especially. So What are your thoughts on the overall kind of construction of the team?
I think you make a great point. Okay, so if we look at last year, it was a predominantly right-handed team, and it was unfortunate because it was a right-handed team that didn't particularly hit lefties all that well, surprisingly at times. The one thing that I will say that does kind of change that up is them bringing in Kendrys Morales. Because his ability to switch hit, I think he's going to hit fourth in that lineup. That's where he's probably going to project to hit. And having that left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup, it's not just about his stats. It's about a ripple effect that it has. I think back to 2006 when Troy Gloss came over to the team. He brought some great numbers, obviously. He was like a 30-100-100 guy, but he had an effect on the rest of the team. He made that lineup kind of a different kind of lineup, and I kind of see the same thing with Morales. I'm not saying Morales is, you know, better than Edwin or anything like that. He's not going to hit 35 home runs like Edwin did. He'll hit 25, though, and he's going to drive in over 100 runs. So I just think that having that switch-hitting bat in the middle of the lineup, hitting left-handed at times, I think it's going to have an interesting effect. It's going to be an interesting season for the Blue Jays, and I think Morales could have a little bit more of a residual effect on this team than you think.
I would hope so from a fantasy perspective, because losing E5 is definitely a blow to fantasy owners in terms of, you know, those people who are rostering him in as a Blue Jay, and for the lineup as well. I like Morales. I think he was a good add. I think maybe had they waited a little bit longer, maybe they wouldn't have had to spend so much money on him, because we saw what happened to kind of the first base DH market after his signing. It just kind of crashed, and guys didn't really get as much money as everybody thought they would. So, but from a fantasy perspective, I like Morales because I think he's going to come at a pretty reasonable price. And I agree. I think he can hit 25, maybe even 30 home runs in that lineup and replace a lot of the production lost by E5.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Let's move over to first base and talk about the kind of the guys who are going to be replacing E5 there at first. I mean, they still have Justin Smoak, a former top prospect that never reached the potential we thought he would. And then they've got Steve Pearce, who will probably platoon with him a little bit over there. What are your thoughts on these two guys?
Yeah, like you said, we're looking to replace E5's production in the lineup. These two guys are not the answer, obviously. Mm-hmm. And from a fantasy perspective, don't really like either one. If I had to like one of them, obviously Pearce is the better of the two. Justin Smoak's a late inning replacement, defensive replacement guy. That's what he is. He's a bench guy. That's all he is. Pearce, at least, I think it was interesting last year because he kind of got that opportunity to play at the beginning of the year last year, and he was producing. It was the injury, obviously, that kind of cut into his time. But you cannot ignore the fact that, you know, Steve Pearce is getting up there in years and he still has not been able to grab a full-time job and run with it yet. So I think if you're putting all your eggs in one basket with him, it's not going to be pretty. He might see some time in left field as well. He's got some, position flexibility, that's for sure. But I definitely like him better than Smoak. But Pearce to me has always been kind of like more of, if you play like DFS, target him against, especially at home, against like a really kind of mediocre left-handed pitcher. He's going to crush and just kill him. Mm-hmm. But as a fantasy asset in season-long leagues, I think I'd just rather pass on him.
Yeah, I think I would probably pass on them both in season-long fantasy. I like what you said about DFS, though, because that is a really good point. Crushes lefties. And if you're in a league that only has has kind of smaller requirements for eligibility. So, like, if you're in, like, Yahoo, which I think only requires, like, 10 games at a position to get eligibility, he'll be eligible at first, second, and outfield. So then he becomes interesting kind of in a deeper format as a bench option because he can cover a couple different positions for you for off days and injuries and things like that. But other than that, yeah, it's pretty much a DFS option. Smoak is a guy I always thought would kind of come through and figure it out because he has massive power. He just can't seem to connect it. And at this point in his career, he's 30 years old, and I have no faith that he's ever going to put it together. So let's go ahead and move over to second base. Are you a Devon Travis believer?
I am not, actually. I know he's hit 300 the last 2 years, but even last year, that was buoyed by a really high batting average on balls in play. He doesn't walk enough. They've experimented with him at the top of the order. It's not a great idea. He's more of an 8-9 hitter is really what he is. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, he's only 25 years old. I know, but at what point do we kind of say, okay, this is an injury prone kind of guy? Because I mean, injuries do play into it. I mean, you know, obviously he missed a big chunk of the season the year previous. He missed the beginning of the season last year, and then he came back, and then of course in the playoffs he hurt his knee. And it's just, I don't know, he's not someone I put a lot of stock into. Obviously him healthy is great for the Toronto Blue Jays and great for fantasy, but he's risky for me. And even when he is healthy and on the field, he doesn't exactly deliver a lot fantasy wise. I mean, it's still a great trade. They traded Anthony Goes to get him. What a great trade that is. But from a fantasy perspective, he's not someone I'm going to put a lot of stock into. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was never really on the Travis train, but I'm definitely not even getting anywhere close to it nowadays. I think the injuries have just really sapped his ability to produce at the level that people kind of expected him. People really thought that he would turn into a, you know, 10, 20, 15, 20 kind of athlete and player, but I just don't see it happening, especially with the constant leg injuries. You just can't see him stealing the bases. So for me, he's just going too high. You know, you've got guys at the second base position going behind him, like Starlin Castro, Logan Forsyth, Neil Walker. You know, those are guys I think I would much rather have than Devon Travis, because, I mean, outside of Walker, I know those guys are going to stay on the field. I'm going to get 150-something games from them. You know, and Walker at least has extreme upside if he can stay on the field and is a pretty good bargain. So, yeah, Travis is the guy I'm targeting this year.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, and that's really, really where he's being slotted in. If you look at ADP, I think it's important to look at when it comes to Devon Travis, because it's easy to look at him and go, okay, he's like, right now his ADP is around 225 overall, right? 20th first baseman off the board. He's late. I can still get value out there. But hold on a second. You made a great point. When there's players like Starlin Castro, and especially for me, Logan Forsyth. Logan Forsyth is going 40-some-odd picks after Travis. If Logan Forsyth is still available, I'd much rather have him over Devon Travis. You know, Logan Forsyth is sort of really, he's been a bit of a late bloomer, coming into his own, now over on the Dodgers, leading off. They've already said he's probably going to lead off. Much, much rather have Logan Forsyth over Devon Travis. So that's a good point.
All right. Let's move over to another injury-prone guy. That's Troy Tulowitzki. Any chance you think he rebounds this year?
Troy Tulowitzki is another guy that's really, really tough to trust just from that. Whereas, like I said before, can we, you know, paint Devon Travis as a 25-year-old as an injury-prone guy? Okay, maybe not. He's still pretty young. Maybe not. Tulo's definitely a guy that we can paint with that brush, and you know what you're going to get with him. He's going to be on the DL. Last year he went through a real cold spell at the beginning of the year. He definitely turned it on later on. The problem with him always has been that name. He has his name attached to him that he ends up going way too high. And I mean, right now he's just on the borderline top 10, and he's going 146 overall in ADP. But again, if you take a look at where Tulo's going, and if there's players that are after him that are available, like Baez and Russell and even Elvis Andrus and guys like that, I tend to lean toward those guys, especially if I can get them a bit later than I would be in putting any real stock in Tulo. So it's funny, I'm a Toronto Blue Jays fan, but like I said off the top, from a fantasy perspective, don't expect to come to this team and just go nuts with some of these players. I think, you know, you got to look at where they're going in drafts, what their ability is, and what that risk management looks like. And so for me, I've never been a Tulo guy from fantasy perspective. When he's on the field, man, he's great. As a Blue Jays fan, great to watch. Love to have him on my team. Not so much on my fantasy team.
Yeah, I mean,
Tulo, it seems like I'm being negative. I'm sorry. It seems like I'm being negative on all these players.
You have reason to be negative about some of them, and I'm sure.
But I'm trying to be realistic. Yeah,
we'll talk about some. There's a little bit more bright spots a little bit later, but and probably the next guy. But first, Tulo for me is an interesting guy. For me, it depends on depth of league, because in a 15-team league, there's no way I'm taking Tulo as my starting shortstop, because there's just not enough replacement value out there. But like, if you're in a 10 or a 12-team league, I'm willing to roll the dice, because there's going to be, you know, this isn't the shortstop of a couple or shortstop position of a couple of years ago where there wasn't any replacement value. I mean, you've got guys who will be on your waiver wire or that you can get as backups later on, like Didi Gregorius, like Jose Reyes, like Asdrubal Cabrera.
Brandon Crawford would probably still be available in a shallow league. So yeah, I agree with you. That's a good point. Those guys are still available out there. Then you might want to roll the dice. Mm-hmm.
But if you're playing in a deep league, if you're playing in AL only, if you're playing in 15 or 20-team mixed leagues, There's no way you can bank on Tulo playing 140 games. So it's hard to take that gamble. I mean, on the bright side, I think they're, you know, while the year actually wasn't that bad, I mean, he had 24 home runs with a .254 average, isn't great, but you could see that come up. He had a, you know, much lower BABIP than normal. And, you know, a lot of guys got power boosts last year because of juice balls or whatever you want to call it, just the era we're in. And I'm sure a lot of those are going to come back down. I can buy the 24 home runs from Tulo. To me, I think I can pencil him in for 20 and feel pretty confident I'm going to get there. And if his average comes up around the .270 mark, even better. Decent lineup, going to be batting somewhere towards the top or middle of it. So Tulo's a guy, like I said, in a 12-team league, I've got no problem with it. Start getting any larger than that, then I think he becomes too risky for the gains. Josh Donaldson, I mean, this will probably be a pretty quick, easy conversation. But where are you taking him, like, in the first round? Because he's obviously a first-round pick.
He's a first-round pick. I guess a little bit more toward the back end. And here's the thing. Chris Bryant, if you want to take Chris Bryant, you're going to have to take Chris Bryant in the first four picks, I think, mm-hmm. or he's not going to be on the board. And Josh Donaldson and Chris Bryant are almost identical fantasy players if you look at their stats. And so the problem, though, is I'm not saying don't pass on Chris Bryant because you're not going to get – you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Donald, it's not like, well, you can get Donaldson like a round or two later. Ain't going to happen. It's back into the first round. So it's kind of a moot point, but I think those guys are a lot, very, very similar. Whereas Bryant as a young player could technically have some regression. Josh Donaldson, I think you could just lock him in for those numbers. We know exactly what you're going to get from Donaldson. And, you know, even if you look at things like his walk rate increased last year, so there's even some positive signs there, even though some of the counting stats went down a bit. Donaldson, man, is phenomenal. So there's the one guy on this team that is in the top of his position. Roll of the dice between Bryant, Arenado, and Donaldson and Machado. Really, those guys are all so close at third base. I'd have any one of them. I have no problem with you ranking Donaldson ahead of any of those three guys. And I'd also have no problem with you ranking him fourth behind those three guys. So I think he's that good. Third base is, you know, obviously got some really, really front-loaded talent there. But, man, Donaldson, he might be the best of the bunch.
Yeah, I have him fourth. And, you know, but I totally agree with you that you could interchange them. I don't have a huge argument why. I mean, one, I just prefer Arenado in Colorado over him. Then Chris Bryant has outfield eligibility, which really helps. And Machado is shortstop eligibility. So, I mean, you know, that for me gives a little bit of a boost in case you have an injury, you need to move guys around, you have a little bit of flexibility. But it's razor thin because, like you said, you can pretty much bank on the numbers from Donaldson that we've seen over the course of the last couple of years. Let's move on out into the outfield, and we'll start with Jose Bautista. He's returning. Toronto can take a sigh of relief, and so can Jose Bautista's agent. So, what are your thoughts on Bautista for this season?
So, on the superficial, if you're just going to look at numbers, it's easy to look at Bautista and go, okay, over the last three seasons, his average has been going down, the home runs are going down, the RBIs are going down, he's 36, he's trending down. And, you know, you look at a couple of injuries that he had even last year. But the thing is, so he's 36 years old, right? Which is old, right? But, you know, injuries even aside from last year, this is a guy who keeps himself in incredible shape. So it would not surprise me to see him bounce back a little bit. I think everyone in the fantasy community is looking the other way and saying he's going to regress some more, he's going to get worse. You know? Here's the thing. Watching Bautista as I have, you know, over the last, you know, better part of the last, you know, 6-7 years, this is a guy that there's some intangibles here. And one of them is that he plays with a chip on his shoulder. And if he's one of those guys that if you ever kind of doubt him or if he's in a situation where he has to prove something, he proves it. So I think he's in a situation this year where, let's face it, this is his first time in his career he was able to go out as a free agent and cash in after all these 40 and, you know, 50 home run seasons. He's going to go out and cash in. And it didn't happen. This guy is pissed. He's pissed, and I think he has got something to prove, and that's the kind of intangibles I think you need to take into account when you're looking at fantasy, and especially if you take a look. I mean, where is he? Where, I'm just trying to think whereabouts he's going overall. Probably just outside the top 100.
Yeah,
probably
as ADP. 112 on NFBC League's 26th outfielder off the board.
Okay, so 26th outfielder off the board, 112, you said, overall. That's a situation where – you can get some return on your investment. Mm-hmm. Can he put up first round numbers anymore? Probably not, but I think he could put up second round numbers. So I think you could get you. This is somebody who I would actually look at targeting, because I think against the grain, everyone else is going the other way. I'm going to go this way on him and say that I think where he's going, there is value to be had. If he was going in the the second round, I'd say maybe not. There's too much risk. But going outside the top 100, I'm in with Batista.
Yeah, I mean, he is kind of almost perfectly ranked for me in terms of his ADP. I mean, there are a couple guys ahead of him that I'm not big fans of, and I'd probably take Batista. But there are a couple guys behind him that, you know, I think I might gamble on a Steven Piscotty or Lorenzo Cain over Batista. But I think you're right. I mean, he's got upside. You know, it wasn't that long ago he was pretty much a perennial first, second round pick. So, and in OBP formats, he takes a huge jump forward, and I don't think he's getting necessarily the credit in some OBP formats that he should. I mean, last year walked 16.8% of the time. Yeah, the average is a little paltry, .234 last year, but a .366 on base is fantastic. I can't imagine he doesn't hit at least 28 to 30 home runs as long as he's healthy. I think the Blue Jays will do their best to try to protect him, maybe give him some run at DH and, you know, see if Morales can play some first base at times. Plus, that would get Justin Smoke off the field every once in a while. You know, as long as he stays healthy, I think we can see a return back towards the numbers we saw prior to last season. So I agree with you. I think he's a guy that you should definitely target if he starts to fall.
Yeah, and you mentioned the batting average, but I mean, if you want to look at a couple outliers on that, like the batting average on balls in play last year at .258 was really low. So, that, you know, we could see the average creep up a little bit, especially with that elite walk rate. Mm-hmm. So, again, outside the top 100, I'm buying.
Yep, I'm right there with you. Let's move on over and talk about Kevin Pillar. I mean, last year he was like one of the big names that people were calling sleepers, and his draft price skyrocketed because of it. Was not that impressive. Do you think that he can rebound a little bit?
I think he can rebound a little bit. I think you got to temper your expectations with him a bit. One of the things that I liked about him last year was that, and now I've said this before, I used to say this on my podcast and on Twitter quite a lot, Kevin Pillar is Jason Hayward. And if you look at their stats year to year, they're the same player. And whereas last year, Jason Hayward was probably going like probably 100 picks ahead of Kevin Pillar. That's, you want to target someone like Pillar over someone like Jason Hayward. This year, I think Pillar is going actually before Hayward in a lot of ADP. The thing with Pillar is that he was miscast a little bit at the beginning of last year, because what Toronto did was they put him in the leadoff spot thinking, you know, he's got some speed, you know, because, I mean, he had stolen 25 bases in 2015. So, okay, let's put him in the leadoff spot. He's going to be able to do that. This is a hacker, man. If you watch him, he goes up there, he hacks, he makes good contact, but he's a hacker. So he's not walking. He's up there taking his swings. It's not necessarily a guy you want in the leadoff spot. He's more that defensive guy. Like in real baseball, we call him Superman here in Toronto. You probably heard, but I mean, like from a fantasy perspective, he doesn't walk enough. His strikeout, like I say, his strikeout rate's low. He makes good contact. I like that, but I mean, overall, this is not a great hitter. So, but I mean, like someone like Jason Hayward, who hopefully the shine is starting to come off Hayward now. People are starting to realize his, you know, swing's all messed up, all that kind of stuff. So you couldn't get that same value. But I was saying to people last year, if you're targeting Hayward, wait a bunch of rounds and take Kevin Pillar. You'll get the same, you know, performance fantasy wise. And they did. But again, I'm not like a lot of these other Blue Jays, not putting a lot of stock in him.
Yeah, I'm not putting a lot of stock in him either. The thing that you mentioned that is really important though, is that he is Superman defensively. And that will keep him on the field. So if you're in a larger format, AL only, or 15-team mixed, he's a guy that is worth owning because you know he's going to get at bats because they're going to keep running him out there because he plays a fantastic center field. And that's important for leagues in which at bats are really important and plate appearances are really important. You know, I say all the time, at bats are currency. And that is one piece of currency that he is going to have. It may not always be pretty, but he should steal you, 10 to 15, maybe even 20 bases, and, get on base enough to be interesting in those leagues. So in deeper formats, you can do worse than Kevin Pillar as like a fifth outfielder.
So I just looked it up. Jason Hayward is currently going 255th overall in ADP, mm-hmm. and Kevin Pillar is going 328. So if you want to, if you're going to target Jason Hayward, you know, in the 250s, and you're looking at taking Hayward, you know what? Hold off for 70 picks and take Kevin Pillar.
Mm-hmm. I'm all on that bandwagon right there. Let's go ahead and move over to Melvin Upton. Is he going to play a large role on this team this year?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, he doesn't strike me as being an everyday player. They certainly didn't treat him as an everyday player when he came over. He tanked when he came over. He's easy to look at and go, well, he's got the 20 home runs, he's got the 27 steals. You know, the 2020 is great, right? But I don't, the way that they utilized him on the team, I don't think this team is done yet. I think they've got to do something, whether it's Pearson to left field, or if they're going to get somebody from outside the organization, or, you know, God forbid, somebody from the minors, Pompey, or somebody finally steps up. I don't see Melvin Upton as being an everyday player with this team. That's my take on it, and I would treat him accordingly in fantasy. For sure. I would not look at it and go, oh, he's now in the Blue Jays, going to have a chance. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the spotlight thing, going from, no media attention basically at all into all of a sudden now he's in Toronto. I don't know if it was moving back to the American League. Something just didn't go well when he came over, and he didn't look great. So I just cannot see him being an everyday player for the Toronto Blue Jays in 2017.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, from August, beginning of August on, hit 203. Had 4 home runs, 7 stolen bases. So stolen bases are nice, but yeah, 203, 271, 333, triple slash. I think he's going to be a reservist, and I think you're right. I don't know if the Blue Jays are completely done shopping. You know, I could see them as a team that maybe goes out and gets another outfielder to try to kind of thicken up that lineup. Or, you know, like you said, Kevin Pillar out in, at least platooning out in left field when he's not playing first for Justin Smoke or something like that. So, I don't want to have anything to do with Melvin Upton. I've been off that bandwagon for, I think, feels like a decade now. Ezekiel Carrera, any interest?
No. Okay. No, I mean, Ezekiel Carrera is a bit of a fan favorite. He was able to step in when Batista went down and played admirably in that time, but he's not a full-time player, and he shouldn't be treated anywhere as such for fantasy purposes.
I agree. Let's just move on. Let's talk about the starting rotation, because I think this is an underrated rotation, especially from a fantasy perspective. Start with Aaron Sanchez, probably the only guy who's not underrated. Is he a future star?
Aaron Sanchez is an interesting guy, and he's getting a lot of talk in fantasy circles, but there's a couple things. Again, I'm a Jays fan, but I'm a naysayer in some of these guys. Okay, in 2015, he had just over 100 innings pitched, right, across the minors and the majors, and last year it jumped to 192. Now, the Verducci effect tells us, if you believe in this sort of thing, that a pitcher under 25 years old, and Sanchez is 24, right? If this pitcher under 25 sees an increase in his workload of 30 innings or more from the previous season, then he's at greater risk of injury or of steep decline, right? So that's 30 innings. So Sanchez jumped over 90 innings. I'm not saying that makes him 3 times more likely, you know, than anyone else, to get injured. But what I do know is this, is that fantasy baseball is all about risk management. And Sanchez represents some risk to me. It's up to you to decide how much risk you want. In my spare time, I'm a college professor of business and marketing, and one of the things we talk about all the time as a bit of a crossover between the two for me is risk management. And there's a lot of risk here. His current ADP is 106, so he's a 28th starting pitcher off the board. That makes him an SP2. And I generally do not like to have a lot of risk in my SP1 or SP2 picks. So for that reason, I'm going to pass on Sanchez.
Yeah, I think he's the kind of guy that if you're going to take him, and I loved Aaron Sanchez coming into last year. I've been a big fan of his, actually, the last couple years. So I'm, you know, there's part of me that really wants to hold on to that prior love. But I think he's a guy, like you said, is risky. There is some regression possibly coming, in his ERA. So I'm very tentative. I'm willing to take the gamble, but only if I'm kind of pairing him up with a sturdy starter. So, like, if I get a Lester as my one, or I get a Bumgarner or a Scherzer as my one, then I'm more than happy to swoop him up as my two. But I see a lot of people going out and getting Aaron Sanchez as their one, and then grabbing other guys that have some risk too. And that, to me, is a little bit scary. Because like you said, there are some warning signs. The workload additions can be a little scary. He put on a bunch of muscle last year, so maybe that's not as big of an issue as we've seen before. But, you know, this is a guy that people worried about whether or not he could handle a full workload. So I love the talent. I love what I saw last year. But it's definitely a gamble, and if you're not willing to take some gambles at that point in the draft on your pitching, then he's probably a guy to avoid. What about Marco Estrada and Jay Happ? These two guys seem to be undervalued coming into every draft, for the last couple of years, and then seem to just keep, shoving it and performing. Are you willing to buy them, especially at a reduced price?
Yeah, I am, because the thing with Estrada is everybody just keeps underestimating him. He reminds me of, remember the movie Pulp Fiction, and there was the scene with Bruce Willis, and he says, the thing is, they just keep underestimating you. You know, and I think of that with Estrada too. He was an all-star last year. He couldn't go to the game because he hurt his back. But I mean, this is an all-star. And the thing is, everyone looks, oh, he's an extreme fly baller in the Rogers Center. His batting average on balls in play is too low. It's all going to regress. It's all going to come crashing down. This is a guy who does not rely on a fastball. His fastball is 88. Okay. He doesn't rely on that. He relies on keeping people off speed, and he keeps them, he keeps them guessing, and he locates his pitch as well. He is up in the zone, so he's at risk to give up some home runs. But overall, Estrada is incredibly underrated, I think, both in regular baseball and in fantasy baseball. And if you take a look, whereabouts is his current ADP right now? He's probably going like, what, 200, something like that. Here he is, 214. Mm-hmm. So he's the 60th starting pitcher off the board. That's a place where you can get some value out of that. So I'm in with Estrada.
I am too. I keep going back to the well because, one, he just costs nothing. I mean, to get a guy who's put up the numbers he has the last few years to be going outside the top 200, that seems to be just a steal. I'm going to keep going back to the well. Giving up soft contact the way he does is a skill, and it's a skill that doesn't always get reflected in projections. And people look at his projections, and you go to like Steamer, Zips, and you start seeing, oh man, they've got Steamer has him projected for a 4.69 ERA. That's not going to happen. I just don't buy that. Even if his numbers take a little bit of a hike, it's not going to go over four. He's definitely worth the gamble, and I think. One, there's some ageism that goes on in fantasy. Guy's 33, going to be 34 this year. And two, like you said, fly ball pitcher in Rogers Center, people are afraid. But the last two seasons in a row, he's been able to keep the home run rate down. And as long as he continues to do that, I think he's going to be fine. He's a crafty veteran, and those are the kind of guys that people overlook in fantasy because they don't have the sexy numbers, typically, that end up paying pretty big dividends during the season. Jay Happ, you interested in him?
I am, because sometimes people are just late bloomers. And, the last time he was with the Jays in 2014, it wasn't pretty. He wasn't throwing the sliders much. He was relying on the curveball a bit more, and it just wasn't working out. And then he went away, got some things figured out. He's come back. He's a different kind of pitcher. I think he always tried to overthrow the ball throughout his career. And now you look at him, and this is a guy that's actually figured, oh, you know what? I got to pitch. And he's actually pitching out there, and he's very confident. I like him. I think he's very, very underrated. So again, it's all comes back to that risk management. And to me, where he's going and people are just writing him off again, I think he's definitely worth a gamble.
Yeah. I mean, he's going a little bit higher than he has in the past, but it's not an exorbitant price tag by any stretch of the imagination. There are some guys behind him that are interesting to me, Vincent Velasquez, Lance McCullers, Jared Eichhoff, Carlos Rodon, James Paxton. So I'm probably going to miss out on him because those guys have, some pretty nice upside, but they also have some downside that I think Happ probably doesn't have as low of a floor. So it kind of depends maybe on your draft construct at that point. If you've taken some risks early on, maybe Happ's a nice little kind of mid-rotation anchor to help you out. Or if you need to take some upside picks, then maybe you steer away from go after some of these kind of bigger up and coming names.
You make a really good point. There's if you look at Happ just amongst himself, that's one thing. But that's a really good point. If you take a look at who's on the board when you're getting ready to take Happ, if I look out there and I see Aaron Nola and I see Vincent Velasquez, and according to current ADPs, they would both be available, I would rather have their upside over Hap at this point. So that's a really good point. So I think you got to really take a look at who's still on the board at that point, and ADP comes into play into this one.
Definitely. Marcus Stroman. Here is my big, like, my big guy that I'm loving this year because it seems like nobody's respecting him at all. What are your thoughts on Marcus Stroman?
Stroman was tough to watch last year. I mean, if you think about in June, I was a big proponent. Excuse me, at the time in June, I thought he should have been sent down to the minors to try and get things figured out. He was that bad. And, you know, obviously he turned things around and that kind of thing. Again, when you talk about intangibles, I think we need to discuss them a little bit with Stroman. So one thing is, you watch him on the mound, he's out there, he's just wired, he's got this, he looks like he's got about 10 pieces of gum in his mouth and he's just chewing away at it and he's super excited and stuff. This is the kind of thing that tends to wear a little bit thin with management and with teammates. So that's something to think about. If you recall, there was a lot of rumors about the potential deal of him going to the Rockies for Charlie Blackmon, which I would have loved. So the fact that me as a Blue Jays fan would have loved to see that trade. I would have loved to see Blackmon at the top of the order, and I think it was that would be a good trade. I think maybe speaks a bit too about how we see Stroman, how the team sees Stroman. I know he's a big ground baller and that kind of thing. The strikeouts aren't great. He's a guy that I think I would pass on.
Mm.
Okay. Interestingly enough, sorry.
It's okay. I've been a Stroman guy for a while, and I got hurt last year because of it. I'll be real honest. I had Stroman on a number of leagues, including my my Barf League team. From the rec room and that draft. It hurt. However, after July 26th of last year, he had an 8.28 K per nine, a 3.59 ERA, and that's with a couple just, awful outings mixed into those. He really started to turn things around, and I think he got some mechanical fixes, and I think he got his confidence back. And I think this is a guy that is being extremely underdrafted this year. Currently going as number 39th pitcher off the board, 165th overall on NFBC. I'm all in again on Marcus Stroman. I'm going to do an article here soon about guys who I'm still in on that are going way later than they did last season, and he's going to be one of the headliners in that article. Any interest in Francisco Liriano?
Actually, I do. And again, going back to what we said before, when you look at ADP and stuff like that, risk management, Francisco Liriano is currently going 283rd. Okay, so he's the 83rd starting pitcher off the board. And you know what you can get at this level? You can get value. And Francisco Liriano, like it or not, some people disprove these things, whatever, but there are sometimes there's just players that alternate between a good season and a bad season. And he seems to be one of them. And so, if you buy into that kind of thing, you look at the numbers that way, you can say, well, then he's due for a good season. And let me tell you, he was horrible in Pittsburgh last year, like just unrosterable, horrible. But when he came over to Toronto, something clicked. And he's always been a bit of a flaky kind of guy. You know what I mean? So maybe that change of scenery, I don't know, something happened. As a pitcher, he still walks a lot of guys and he can be a little bit of an adventure out there on the mound. But he was an interesting guy when he came over to Toronto last year. And I think he's going to be an interesting guy watching going in. And really, he's going to be their number five starter. There's going to be no pressure on him. Like I say, from a fantasy perspective, he's going almost, just inside the top 300, barely. I think you can get some value out of this guy. So he's somebody I would definitely look at in the later rounds, especially in deep leagues. I actually kind of like Liriano.
Yeah, I think he's kind of a sneaky guy. I was ready to bash him, especially because Liriano is one of those guys that Matthew Berry, when he used to host the Fantasy Focus baseball show, used to say guys like Liriano were his fantasy kryptonite. And I totally buy into that because I loved Liriano from day one. When he had the Tommy John in Minnesota, I was devastated because it killed me in every single keeper league I was in. But, like you said, he was awful in Pittsburgh. But from the beginning of August when he got moved over to Toronto, he had a sub-3 ERA, and an almost 9.5 strikeout per nine. I mean, that to me is those are pretty decent numbers. And considering, on in NFBC leagues, he's almost going or he's going outside the top 90 starting pitchers. Like, I don't think there's anything but upside. He's one of those guys that you take in a 15-team league as your last guy, and if he doesn't work out, you drop him for whoever else is out there because you didn't invest anything. But like you said, every once in a while, Liriano has one of those bad seasons, and then the next year he pops right back up and seems to roll right along. And so I'm willing to take the gamble, especially at the price. All right, let's move into the bullpen, talk about Roberto Osuna, top five closer.
Yes, I think he's a top five closer, probably number five, but he is in the top five. It's interesting because at this time last year, we were having an argument about who was going to be the closer for the Toronto Blue Jays. Was it going to be Roberto Osuna or was it going to be Drew Storen? Everyone thought it might be Drew Storen because they, you know, went out and obviously traded Ben Revere for him. And I was even leaning to the camp that it's going to be Drew Storen because I thought they might try and stretch Osuna out, make him into a starter, kind of like what they did with Sanchez. And then by the end of the year, so at the beginning of the season, you're thinking, oh, the team doesn't really believe in Osuna. By the end of the year, he was being used in every single situation of the postseason you could imagine. They really, they believe in Osuna, and I think you should believe in Osuna as well. The only, I guess, negative, it's not even really a negative against him, is that sometimes when people square him up, they can take him, they can jack him out of the park. But this guy does not get faced. He's 21 years old, and he is just, he's got ice in his veins out there. And that's what you look for in a closer is, no, he doesn't get rattled. He comes into the game. He does his job. I think Osuna is really, really good. And yeah, I would say, you know, I usually target closers in fantasy. I tend not to, but I think Osuna is a good one for sure.
I think he's an interesting name to go after if you miss out on the elite guys. I mean, if you miss out on the Chapman, the Jansen, the Britton, I think, I wouldn't necessarily have him in my top five. He's right there. He's probably somewhere 6 through 8. I'm gonna say 7 just off the top of my head, which is where his ADP is in NFBC leagues right now in terms of other closers. You know, the thing about Osuna is he's gonna be on a team that's gonna win some games, and I don't think there's really anybody else in that bullpen right now that is a risk of taking his job. I think he's locked down, and that to me, if you're gonna spend money on a closer, you want to get one of those guys that has the role for sure. Like, if he struggles, isn't going to give it up to Jason Grilly or Aaron Loop. I don't think that is a possibility. So for me, I don't mind where he's going. I'm typically either getting one of the top three or I'm waiting a little bit. And Osuna's one of those guys, if I see him start to fall, you know, along with Edwin Diaz, I'll pop on those guys.
The reason I like him as a top five closer is because to me, there's three guys that are ranked ahead of him in ADP, at least anyway, that have a bit of risk to them. And to me, Wade Davis has a little bit of risk because, I mean, there's a little injury question marks there. Hasn't done it, you know, for a full season. So a little bit of question. And Mark Melanson is what, 76 years old. So there's a couple question marks ahead of him. So as a result, that's why I think Osuna kind of creeps up into that top five discussion. I'm a believer. I like Osuna. I think he's good. Do I want to go risk an early draft picks on closers? Probably not, but you made a good point. The thing is that even if you looked at last year, I know Davis is in with the Cubs now, but if you look at last year, he had people breathing down his neck for that job. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Kelvin Herrera was real good. You know, when Davis went down, Herrera stepped right in. That's not the situation in Toronto. There's nobody. You made a good point. There's nobody there. That job is his. The way they used him in the postseason proved it. He's not going anywhere. That job is his, so you can just lock him in.
Yep, I completely agree with that. Anybody on this team that you'd be interested in for holds if you're in a holds league?
I think Grilly is a name that you mentioned, and I think he's definitely somebody you could look at for holds. I think he'll deliver. They use him in that situation. You know, and I mean, he's done it before. If you look at his career, he was a holds guy before he was made the closer. And then when he lost the closer job, now he's back to holds. He had the 23 last year. So I think Grilly is the one guy. Other than that, tough to target any others, but I think Grilly's your guy for holds.
Yeah, I agree with you. Grilly's the guy if you're looking for holds, which means you probably can get some fairly decent holds numbers. I mean, he had 23 between two teams last season. Wouldn't be surprised if he gets, 20-plus holds within the organization, because I think just like there isn't a whole lot of competition for Osuna in terms of the closer role, I don't think there's a whole lot of competition in terms of Grilly in the setup role unless they bring someone else in.
And I think Grilly just has that makeup. Like he's a bulldog and he's a competitor. The only name that I would put into that conversation as possibly someone that could take that away is Biagini.
Okay.
But I think Grilly is still the guy, but Biagini would be a close second for me.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Chris, thank
nice.
You for
we
joining
did it.
Me.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's, you know, we've obviously spent a lot of years together doing podcasts together, talking mm-hmm. about fantasy baseball. It's always great to get, you know, get back in and get my feet wet every once in a while from time to time. But thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, you are always welcome to come back on. I'm sure we will finagle you back on at some point. But definitely go out and listen to Pop Goes Your World. It is well worth a listen, especially if you're like me and you listen to a ton of baseball stuff and you need a break. Like I take that, you know, 30 to 40 minutes each week to listen to your podcast because it gives me a break of the constant stream of baseball kind of knowledge that I get from podcasts. So it is definitely worth going out and subscribing, giving a 5-star review to. Highly recommend it. So Chris, give yourself some plugs, and then also remind people where you can reach you on social media.
Yeah, on social media, you can follow me on Twitter at C McBrien, IEN. I'll follow you back. We'll have lots of conversations. It's all good. And, you know, it's popgoesyourworld.com, and you'll find Pop Goes Your World along with myself and Yancey Eaton. And we have a different guest every week now. Yeah, come check it out. We have lots of fun over there. That's for sure. Make sure, Justin, you say hi to Mike and the guys for me, okay?
I definitely will. All right. Thanks, Chris. For Chris and myself, have a fantastic baseball season.